You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news in technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hi, folks. Ben here with a quick favor to ask. There are some great advertisers who support the show, and in order for them to continue doing that, I need your help. Please do me a favor and go to podsurvey.com/kick and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you a little better. Even if you've taken our show's podcast listener survey before, the current one is new and different, so I'd really love for you to take it again. Plus, once you've completed the survey, you can enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Again, that's podsurvey, podsurvey.com/kick. Thanks for your help, and now enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. I'm happy to welcome my guest today back on the podcast. You heard from director-producer Evgeny Afnifsky last year when we talked about his amazing feature documentary, Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom. The film chronicled the peaceful protests in Kiev's Maidan Square that sparked a revolution in Ukraine in the winter of 2013 and 2014. Winter on Fire was an official selection of the Venice and Telluride International Film Festivals. It received the People's Choice Award for the Best Documentary from the Toronto International Film Festival, and it was nominated for last year's Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature. Now his latest film, Cries from Syria, gives a searing, comprehensive account of a different peaceful revolution that has escalated into a protracted and bloody war. The film draws on hundreds of hours of war footage from Syrian activists and citizen journalists, as well as testimony from child protesters, revolution leaders, human rights defenders, ordinary citizens, and high-ranking army generals who have defected from the government. Cries from Syria had its premiere at this year's Sundance Film Festival, and it airs on HBO tonight, Monday, March 13th at 10 p.m. Eastern. And today, Evgeny Afnifsky joins me to talk about how this film evolved from a documentary about the Syrian refugee crisis into a much bigger film that gives context to their terrible plight. He details how Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad helped fuel radical groups like ISIS in order to force the leaders of the revolution to have to fight a war on two fronts, and more importantly, to misdirect media attention toward ISIS instead of Assad's own crimes, and convince world leaders like Donald Trump that the murderous Assad is somehow the lesser of two evils. Evgeny will talk about the evidence that Assad continues to use chemical weapons long after the world condemned his use of sarin gas, and he's been the instigator of a deliberate campaign of terror, carpet-bombing civilian neighborhoods, hospitals, and schools. He'll share some of the heartbreaking stories of the thousands of children who've become the innocent victims of the Syrian war. He'll also call BS on Vladimir Putin's assertion that Russia is helping to fight ISIS in Syria and discuss how Russia has only escalated civilian casualties. Plus, Evgeny's thoughts on the murky Trump-Putin relationship. Coming up with documentary filmmaker Evgeny Afnifsky in just a moment. I'm happy to have Oscar-nominated director Yevgeny Ofnivsky. I'm going to ask again, did I get that right this time?
You got it. Very close.
I got very close, you said.
I guess we need to meet another couple of times. So
last year, I had all kinds of problems. Yevgeny Ofnivsky. So close. Hard G. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm happy to be sitting down again with Oscar-nominated director Yevgeny Ofnivsky.
It's okay.
Back on the podcast. His emotional new feature-length documentary, Cries from Syria, premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival, and it airs on HBO this Monday, March 13th at 10 p.m. Eastern. Yevgeny, welcome back on the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, you and I sat down like this about a year ago to discuss your previous film, Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom, which earned you an Oscar nomination last year. At the time, I asked you about your next project, and you sort of teased that you were looking at doing a documentary on the Syrian refugee crisis. Now, what this film has become is much more than that. It is a thorough narrative of the war in Syria and the atrocities committed by the Assad regime from day one up to now. How did the project evolve from a film about the refugee crisis to something with a much wider scope?
It was an original idea to try to tell who are these people from the huge wave of refugees, bigger than even world had since Second World War. And I was following these people, and I was anticipating to try to understand them and tell the comprehensive story about them. And then I realized that you need to go back into the history and try to bring their story from the beginning, because otherwise you're just not able to explain this, let's say, to the audience. The only way it was to go find the icons of the revolution, how it started in 2011, and start with their stories. What brought them to the streets? Why they started to protest? What was the spark of the revolution? What inspired them? And how this revolution or uprising became the civil war and then intervention? And at the same time, as the consequences, creating these massive waves of the refugees. So I decided to reconstruct the journey into the darkest side of the Syrian history, journey into the darkest side of humanity, as we can see in the movie.
I wonder, do you think that there's a mental disconnect in people's minds between the refugee crisis and the source of the refugee crisis, the Syrian war?
First of all, let's remember that in my movie, I'm explaining the birth of ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria. That President Bashar al-Assad in 2011 released two groups of criminals from his prisons. One group was heavy criminals that later on became Shabiha, who were doing kidnapping and all dirty stuff for him, all other atrocities. And the other heavy criminals that were released in 2011 were the radicals. 99% were affiliated with Al-Qaeda. And even the head of Jabhat al-Nusra or Al-Qaeda in Syria, Abu Muhammad al-Julani, was in prison in Syria up until 2011, until he was released from Assad's prison. So this element helped him to destabilize the situation in the country, and at the same time creating from these radicals Al-Qaeda, Jabhat al-Nusra, and ISIS in Syria, it helped him to kind of put attention of the world to the terroristic organizations like Al-Qaeda and ISIS specifically, mm-hmm. and take attention from him that allowed him to use chemical weapon and create much more bigger crimes. For the Syrian people who exposed to this war, their chances in Syria is to die in Assad's prisons from torturing, to die under the shelling of Assad or Russia, under the bombs, to die in ISIS hands or any other fundamental group's hands. The Syrian people can have only one chance to survive if they will leave the country, if they flee the country. So they're seeking shelter. So it's, again, different motivations mm-hmm. for different refugees.
With Cries from Syria and Winter on Fire, your previous film, there are similarities in that you follow what starts as a peaceful protest and then escalates into civil war. But you enter at very different points in those two stories and with varying degrees of resolution at the end. Did you approach Cries from Syria differently than your previous film?
Yes. Remember that in Winter on Fire, I was on the ground from the beginning, so I've been able to witness things. And for me, I had organic full stop after 93 days when the Maidan and the events on the square achieved their goals because of the unity. If we go into the Syria, it was my idea to tell the refugee story. But then I discovered much more behind that. Kids were the first victims and the first heroes. And radicals were trying to take them under their wings and create terrorists from them because they were easy target. In the same time, kids were also fighters on a both sides, Free Syrian Army, other place. So I realized that my main goal will be the kids. So each one 2 years apart. Ilan was 3 years old when he died. And he is symbolizing for me death of the young people in Syria. And this is how the revolution started, with the death. Death inspired people to go on the streets. Death of their own kids, rape of their own wives, inspired people to take weapon in their hands to protect their families. And they became soldiers. So Amran Dahesh, whom we saw all in an ambulance, five-year-old child, he became for me icon of survival and struggle for these kids. And then Bana Alabed, seven-year-old girl, who just wrote a letter to President Trump, and he's not responded at all. He neglected this, that the child asking him for help. Bana became for me some kind of hope. So I think for the first time, I try to put them in one story of the Syrian nation.
And is that what touched off or escalated the protests into a full-scale revolution when these children were going and, you know, spraying graffiti on a wall saying, what was it?
It's your turn, doctor,
referring to Bashar al-Assad, who was an ophthalmologist, I think.
Yes, he was trained ophthalmologist in UK because according to my research, he never was prepared to be a president. His brother, who was accidentally killed in a car accident, was prepared by Hafez al-Assad, his dad, to be president. And then the death of his brother and death of his dad in 2000 makes him all of a sudden the president, because they were living under the totalitarian regime. So at the end of the day, he becoming like a king to the throne, and he is the one who becoming the president. And yes, he was a trained ophthalmologist in UK.
And so these kids sprayed these epithets or, you know, like child's play on a wall or in the streets. They were then arrested, and these were children, like what, 11, 12 years old, were tortured.
I interviewed Summer. I found five of them alive. I found five who survived the massacres. Summer, whom I interviewed another two, and Musa and some others. One I found in Austria, one I found in Jordan, three I found back in the Ra. And actually, Samar and two of his other friends, they were in Jordan before, but they returned back to Syria to fight in Free Syrian Army. They're part of Free Syrian Army. And actually, like I said, for me to reconstruct the history, what it took a long journey, it's to find all these iconic people who are the sparks, who are the leaders, who are the prominent icons of this event. And yes, this, just if Summer right now, 21, and everything happened, let's say, 5 years ago. So you can imagine that he was by this time literally 16, and some of the kids that you saw that were killed, like the little ones, they were 11, 12, 13 years old.
Yeah, and one of the ones who didn't survive that you focus on in the film, his name was Hamza.
Hamza al-Khatib, yeah.
What happened to him?
He was arrested, and then in order to kind of cover their crimes, the regime started to accuse him and the press that he was trying to rape the wives of the officers of the rear. But it's, you know what, it's not making sense that 12-year-old, 13-year-old child going and raping wives. It's absolutely ridiculous. But he was arrested, and later on, his body were literally given to their parents back. That sparked a huge event and escalated the situation in the Iraq.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, he had been tortured, he had cuts on his body, his genitals had been chopped off?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. And this is just a kid. Another one of the stories that you focus on is one of the martyrs of the revolution. I hope I have his name right. Giyas Matar.
Yes.
Yeah, according to the Assad regime, he was a terrorist. But from what I could see, all he did was peacefully protest and hand out flowers to Assad's soldiers.
Flowers and water. And it's so funny how Assad's regime accused everybody in terrorism. Actually, you know what? Talking about the going back to one of your questions before, you asked me about the approach in these two movies. And if you remember, in Winter on Fire, I not tried to interview anybody from the opposition side.
Right.
Like, I not went to the presidential administration of Viktor Yanukovych, who was the president who fled the country. And here, I decided for the first time to allow President Bashar al-Assad to talk. And we do access him, and we do had him to comment on these things. He didn't know that it was for the movie, because he's very specifically choosing the media with whom he's talking. And as you see in a movie, he is responding to all these things, and he openly saying that these people are the terrorists. But you can see also the comments of the people from the other side that, yes, we were protesting peacefully. We were carrying flowers and not guns like his people.
And I want to go back to Bashar al-Assad. I assumed that that was just stock footage that you used. That was your interview with him?
No, it's
that
not our interview. Oh, okay. We asked one of the main journalists in the Czech Republic, who is an amazing political person, to go and to interview him for the specifically Czech TV. And he did it for the Czech TV, but we realized that this is the only way to get to him, because he's very, very specifically choosing the interviews that he's doing. He even not allowed to Czech TV to have their own crew. It's only Michael Kubal who specifically been able to reach him and did this interview. So we used it for our benefit, and we used it because we needed to have Bashar al-Assad to talk to the audience. We needed him to say what he thinks from his point, so nobody can say that I'm doing only one side of the story. We want to hear his point of view on these things. Even if it's a wrong point of view, we want to hear that.
And when you look at bombed out hospitals, schools, sarin gas attacks, chlorine gas attacks, people who are just cut off and starving to death, what is his explanation for that? He just says they're all terrorists, or does he say that they're victims of ISIS or the opposition?
Listen,
what is his excuse?
He have tons of the excuses because it's his point of view to sustain the power and control his country and being a dictator. So it's the only excuse.
Setting aside the bombings and the gas attacks, you know, he cut off supplies to a lot of these cities that were strongholds of the Free Syrian Army. And these children were pretty heartbreaking when you see these kids who literally they look like Holocaust footage.
It is. And by the way, talking about the usage of chemical weapon, last week, a lot of kids died from the chemical weapon that been used again in Syria. And nobody from the media talked about that.
I haven't even heard about it.
But it's happened. Wow. So you see, we as the world, we can completely isolated from this event. And we completely don't know that every year, every month, Syrian government, in cooperation with Russians, they're using the chemical weapon. And that was the dangerous element that happens before and that happening even up until our days. And we live in 21st century.
What kind of, do you know what kind of chemical weapon they
chlorine.
Used? The chlorine. Yeah, that's interesting because he was banned from using sarin gas again. But I guess under the agreement, he can still use chlorine gas. Is
they not
right?
include. They not included chlorine by this moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Americans, we think of chlorine. We think of, you know, putting it in our pools. What does chlorine gas do to the human body?
You know what? It makes you to stop breathing. It literally can make you suffocate yourself.
Wow.
It can make you burn your skin. It can make you burn your eyes.
And I wonder, from the people that you talked to when you were filming this documentary, were they shocked and disappointed that Assad's use of sarin gas didn't prompt more of a response from the world community? I mean, that was supposed to have been a red line, according to our last president.
Yes, but you know what? As you just saw, nobody heard anything since that about usage of chemical weapon, even it was used every year in Syria. So I think it's important to pay attention to what's happening, and I think this movie can teach us a lot.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back to talk more with documentary filmmaker Evgeny Efnivsky when we come back in just a moment. You know, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk with Stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes, so you can get postage whenever you need it 24/7. I've been wanting to try Stamps.com for a while now, so I was thrilled when they wanted to let me try their product. And I can now tell you from personal experience, it's incredibly easy to do. You just print out your postage and slap it on your letter or package, and you're done. And if you have a small business, let me tell you, it's so much better than using those clunky postage meters where you have to pay to preload them with postage and commit to a long-term contract. With Stamps.com, you buy as little or as much postage as you need, and there are no long-term contracts. Stamps.com has really perfected the art of postage. See for yourself. Right now, use my code KICK for this special offer, a 4-week trial that includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in KICK. That's Stamps.com. Enter code KICK. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Now let me tell you, incredible home cooking has never been more attainable thanks to Blue Apron. Because for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron delivers easy-to-follow, seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients right to your door. No more overspending at restaurants or high-end grocery stores. With Blue Apron, you can prepare delicious, memorable meals yourself in under 40 minutes. Not to mention, Blue Apron has partnered with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranches across the U.S. to ensure that all of their ingredients are of the highest quality. And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of ingredients required, there's no food waste. It's delicious, quality food that you can feel good about. Some of the meals available in March include salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple, vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips, and spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/kick. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/kick. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Folks, whether you're starting an online business or trying to get your existing business online, GoDaddy wants to help. GoDaddy's mission is to radically shift the global economy toward life-fulfilling independent ventures, helping customers kick ass by giving them the tools, insights, and the people to transform their ideas and personal initiatives into success. With more than 62 million domain names under management, GoDaddy is the world's largest technology provider dedicated to small business and the largest domain registrar. They have award-winning 24/7 support and everything you need to build your online business. Whether you have a new idea or an established business, the key to success online starts with a great domain name, and GoDaddy is trusted by 13 million customers, more than any other registrar, with big savings over the other guys. And right now, my listeners can get 30% off new purchases on GoDaddy.com by using the code KICK30 at checkout. That's GoDaddy.com, code KICK30 for 30% off. Again, GoDaddy.com and offer code KICK30. And now, back to the podcast. Assad has done a pretty masterful job of propaganda here in that he's changed the narrative from this was a civil war and people fighting for their freedom to it's basically, in the West at least, now it's portrayed as a war against ISIS. One of the officers for the Free Syrian Army in the film points out that while ISIS is horrible and they have committed heinous humanitarian crimes, 98% of the atrocities, according to him, in Syria have been committed by Assad. I mean, certainly ISIS needs to be eliminated, but have we lost sight of who the real enemy is in Syria?
I think Assad created the ISIS and all these radicals in order to shift our attention from his atrocities and his crimes to something else and bring fear to the entire world through the propaganda. Now, I also want to point that this general that you just mentioned, he was responsible during the Assad regime for all chemical weapon. So he was the first kind of first-hand account for me to talk about how the chemical weapon was designed in Syria, from where it came, how they used it. And he defeated only after he was pushed to use chemical weapon majorly on the civilians. And he even said that we tried to not to use this and I just switched the sides because I can't do it on my brothers and sisters. So this general was one of the people, main people, who was responsible for chemical weapon in the Assad regime army.
You know, we were talking about the fact that Assad released a lot of jihadists from prison, that he brought in insurgents from Iraq, Afghanistan, Hezbollah. One could say that he created or at least helped create ISIS in Syria as a way of destabilizing the situation there. Do you think Assad still has that situation under control, or might ISIS and other radicals who he encouraged eventually be the undoing of Bashar al-Assad?
No, he's with ISIS, he's in control.
Yeah.
He's in control.
Really?
Yeah, he's in control.
Wow.
Listen, somebody buying the oil from them, and who will be these people? It's usually Assad, it's usually Russians, because as you remember, it wasn't in the news. I'm not trying to bring something specifically unknown to the audience. When in Iraq, the coalition army and Iraqi army were taking over Mosul, they found some traces of the Russian oil companies. So again, somebody cooperating with them. Now, most of the weaponry that I saw in Syria was Russian made. So it's a lot at stake there.
Now, it is being portrayed as a binary choice here in the U.S. between the lesser of two really, really evil evils, Bashar Assad or ISIS. There is, or at least at one point, was a viable third option, the Free Syrian Army. Are they still left or are they completely decimated?
No, the Free Syrian Army still exists, but as
viable?
You see, that media betrayed them, we can say, because the terminology of rebels or the meaning of the word rebels became a very negative, given negative connotation in the press. But as we learned in my movie, as we learned in the history, the rebels are the same people who stand against dictatorship, and it's the same simple people, like we learned, who've been living in peace, then been disturbed and shocked by the torturing kids, by killing their kids and kids of their relatives. They all went to the streets. They were met by the bullets. their wives were raped, their kids were tortured and killed. They took weapon in their hands, and some of the Bashar's army realized that they can't shoot bullets, real bullets, into the same brothers and sisters. So they turned against Bashar al-Assad, and then it's created the Free Syrian Army that some of the military officers and soldiers from the regime army became a part of Free Syrian Army. They exist, but they're not strong like they were at the beginning.
Yeah, and ISIS has played a key role in decimating the FSA. I was interested in something you said earlier. You feel that they are being directed or somehow controlled by Bashar al-Assad?
They're not controlled, but they're in cooperation.
But you don't think they would overthrow Bashar al-Assad?
No.
Their main target is the FSA?
No, their main thing is the enemies of Bashar al-Assad and enemies of their own. So they're not... you see, if you will trace how Palmyra was back and forth between ISIS and Bashar al-Assad, you will see that, for example, last time Bashar al-Assad left Palmyra easily, leaving behind him tons of the weaponry that immediately went to the the ISIS. And in the same time, you know what? There is no fight between regime and ISIS. The fight are usually between ISIS and FSA, somebody who is against Assad, somebody who is against ISIS or Bashar al-Assad. Same with Al-Qaeda, with Jabhat al-Nusra. They're all kind of, it's tricky right now. They just rebranded as Al-Nusra Front. But it's all not in favor of the Syrians who are standing against the dictatorship.
Yeah, and I want to talk about your old nemesis, Vladimir Putin. In some ways, this film reunites you with him. You lay out a lot of the blame for this humanitarian crisis squarely at his feet. It does seem that things have been escalated since the Russians got more heavily involved. Putin says that Russia is helping fight ISIS. The people who I'm seeing in this film killed and injured don't look like ISIS fighters to me.
No, absolutely not. And you know what? It's not that I'm trying to blame him. It's not that I'm reunited with everything what I had before. I just, let's say, bringing another story of injustice, another inhuman story. And unfortunately, for the Russian people, whom I'm not blaming for that, because they're living under the dictatorship too and propaganda, we can witness that it all comes to their president, same like it comes to the president of Syria, comes to their government too, who are responsible for these atrocities.
With any war, there are going to be civilian casualties. But in the case of the Syrian war in particular, there are dozens of hospitals and schools and civilian apartments being bombed. It seems like it's more than just collateral damage. Do you believe that Assad, aided by Russia, are deliberately targeting civilian targets?
Yes, because his main goal is to bring fear. To break people, to break human spirit, to break human's dignity, it's to bring fear. And hospitals, schools, it's to break people, to make them fear, to make them to give up.
Has Russia escalated the innocent deaths?
Yes.
Wow. On a slightly brighter note, I guess, I want to talk about the White Helmets. Cries from Syria also spend some time with the now legendary White Helmets. Who are they?
They're amazing people because they're volunteers of different professions, teachers, doctors, lawyers. They all came together to help to save lives. And as much as the propaganda says that they're affiliated with Al-Qaeda because they're operating on the territories that are not regime, but it's territories that mostly were under FSA, Free Syrian Army. So you can't tell that they are operating under Al-Qaeda. And it's absolutely wrong assumption, and it's absolutely false accusation. because some of them are dying, trying to save lives. I met some people who've lost legs or lost hands or lost some parts of the body trying to save people's lives. So they're extraordinary people.
To date, I think 7 million people have been displaced. You point out that 2/3 of them are women and children. What do these refugees go through to escape Syria and get to safety?
You know, the interesting thing that the people who fled Syria, it's at least people who had some money. People who not really had money at all or not had any ability to sell anything, they're still there and they're struggling.
Trapped.
Yeah, they're trapped. And it's evolves money because you need to pay bribes to the checkpoints to allow them to go through, bribe to the smugglers to smuggle you through the borders, who had more money, been able to be smuggled through the sea. And so a lot of people died on this journey between Turkey and Greece. Some people been able to get their kids out on their own just to kind of save the kids' lives. So it's a really sad story. Mm-hmm. It's a really sad story. And I think European Union, like us, need to learn more about these people, need to learn to understand who are these Syrian people and that they're looking for the shelter. Because 99.9%, they all want to go home. They're not looking to take over European Union, how it's presented in the press, that they are coming and trying to implement Islam on us. No, they're not. Absolutely not. And I spent a lot of time with all of them. And I not felt any threat. Nobody tried to advocate for me Islam or something. They respected my beliefs and my religion. And for all of them, I became like another brother from another mother. And it was amazing to feel this bond and get my respect. They respected me as a filmmaker. They respected me as a storyteller. It was a period that I needed to gain their trust, to build trust between us, because they were burned by a lot of media. So it took time with some of the characters. And I think for them who were fighting since 2011 for these values, I think what we have in here, we need to cherish because we can lose it easily. And I think this is the sentence that I already said after finishing Winter on Fire, but I want to repeat it. We need to cherish what our founding fathers stood for because we can lose it easily. We need to cherish all these essential values of democracy, freedom of speech and freedom of expression, free press. It's important what we have here. And I think we need to start not to take things for granted.
Mm-hmm. With President Trump's determination to close the border to Syrian refugees, do you fear that we may be making the same mistake we made in the mid and late 1930s when America and other countries refused to accept and aid Jewish refugees and basically sent them back to their deaths?
What choice will be left for these Syrian refugees? The kids who can be easy targets of Al-Qaeda or ISIS? They will be struggling to survive, and Al-Qaeda or ISIS or any other radical groups will gladly open their wings and take them under their wings. And then we will be promoting terrorism.
Yeah.
We will be promoting terrorism instead of help to these kids to find their future and then go back to Syria and rebuild Syria. So shouting the doors is an easy and fast escape from the situation. I advising him to cooperate with our intelligence and then fight it in different ways.
Yeah, and
do you know that today EU also canceled our visa waiver? That right now American passport will need a visa to go to Europe.
Yeah, I did see that headline.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in this film and in the previous film, you've done a pretty good job of calling out Vladimir Putin as the instigator and the global shit stirrer that he is. Any thoughts on the Trump-Putin relationship and the allegations that there was some collusion there?
You know what? I think it's not allegations. I think it's already proved by facts, and it's true because there is a lot of similarities in actions. There is a lot of parallels that are there. And I think I do want to see the Congress this movie because I know that President Trump wants to bring the troops on the grounds of Syria and Iraq. And in my opinion, he will not be fighting ISIS. He will be killing our soldiers, and like it's happened in Yemen. And I think he rather, with his administration, do a proper research with whom he going in bed, with whom he aligning himself, and with whom he doing a partnership. Because he forgetting that at the end of the day, you know, he's responsible for the lives of our soldiers.
Right.
And before he will be sending them into the mousetrap, he needs to know things in advance. He's a chief and commander, so he is responsible for their lives.
Yeah, and sometimes it doesn't seem like he wants to know. And it certainly doesn't help that he's making enemies with our intelligence services.
Absolutely.
Any idea what your next project might be? I asked you last year.
Not as of right now. just literally a few weeks ago finished
maybe
this
one. Maybe the Trump-Russia connection. Maybe.
You know, I know who doing this movie right now. I have friends who doing this movie, and they trying to do it. So I don't think that I will be doing this because there is people who are doing this.
Okay.
Already.
All righty. Well, Cries from Syria airs Monday, March 13th at 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO. Evgeny Efnivsky, congratulations again on the amazing film, and thanks for coming back on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Evgeny Efnivsky for joining me on the podcast. Cries from Syria airs tonight, Monday, March 13th at 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO. Or you can view it whenever you want with a subscription to HBO Now or HBO Go. For more information, visit hbo.com/documentaries. Follow Evgeny Efnivsky on Twitter at @Evgeny_director. And visit his production company at newgenerationfilmsinc.com. Be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. Don't forget to take our listener survey. It only takes 5 minutes at podsurvey.com/kick. You can visit Kick-Ass News on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @KickassNewsPod. And be sure to recommend Kick-Ass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews or click on the donate button at kickassnews.com. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.